You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is for rural leaders and by rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who know what it's like to live, work, and minister in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who value the work that God is doing there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and I am excited today to be joined by a pastor from North Judson, Indiana, Pastor James Young. And we're just going to walk through his journey, right? We're going to talk about the importance of vision in community. We're going to talk about pastor ministry in places that are impoverished, how to be effective in that. And then just even really digging into the side of community development, which if some of you know my personal story, my wife's been in community development even as I was pastoring. And so it's not only a passion of mine, but a really effective way to do ministry. So I'm excited to hear his story. But first, I want to say, Pastor James, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing great today. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Absolutely. We're happy to have you. And again, you and I were just discussing just the joy it is to be able to interview and talk through different people's stories. And I hope people tune in because there's so much good content, so many wise leaders working in the rural church. And so let's take a few minutes here. Sorry. Let's take a few minutes here and let's describe your background in ministry and your connection to the rural church. Tell us where you've been, what you've done, how you got to what you're doing now.
Absolutely. I'm an Indiana boy at heart. I grew up in rural Indiana. I grew up on a farm as a kid. As a child, I'm the oldest of five siblings. And so I have a lot of siblings and we went to church from a young age. My home church is Heartland Christian Center here in Indiana. I started going there when I was 8 years old. From a young age, I've always been heavily involved in serving in the church. As a young kid, I served in kids ministry. I started learning how to play drums, getting involved in the worship ministry. Basically, anything that you could do at church, probably at some point, I've been sure. A part of it.
Run the seniors ministry. That's the question.
Well, see, I've skirted that one a little bit. Haven't been involved with that so much, but I've got, you know, I was very plugged into church, plugged into my youth ministry. And truth be told, I really didn't start out wanting to do ministry. That wasn't my life's passion. By the time I was in high school, I was pretty dead set on being an architect, and pursuing my education in that. But at 16 years old, I went to Indiana Assembly of God church camp. And that summer, I really felt God wreck my world and put in my heart that I was called to ministry, to build his kingdom and not to plan and build buildings. And yeah, Gotta love youth camp, man. That's a shameless plug for youth camp. Send your
students. Yeah, for sure.
But so at 16 is where I felt God called me into ministry. And next thing I knew, a couple months after church camp that year, I was invited to preach my very first youth revival. Out of nowhere. I didn't even know these people. They called me and asked me if I would come and preach. And I said, because I was kind of on the side of God, you really got to show me that this is for sure you.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I started pursuing ministry because I really felt like that was what God's called me to do. And even today, I feel like that's God's calling on my life. And so at 18 years old, I pursued college education in biblical studies. I pursued an internship at another rural community in Indiana. And so I started going to this church. It was called Crossroads Church. It was in DeMott, Indiana. And the very first Sunday, it's actually kind of a web of events. The Sunday I went to check this church out, make sure it's legit, because that's important.
Of course,
you know?
Of course, yeah.
I want to make sure what I'm getting into. But I walking into church, I'll never forget, I saw this girl on the stage. And, you know, all my siblings went with me to church that Sunday.
Sure.
I remember riding home and I nudged my sister. I said, hey, listen, just so you know, I'm going to marry that girl one day. And she told me I was absolutely crazy, Joe, which good sisters should do.
Right.
Come to find out that I was interning for youth ministry at that church. And within a few weeks time, I learned that this girl that I saw on the stage was interning for worship ministry. I said, look at Jesus go.
Look at Jesus.
Look at him go. But I soon found out, this girl let me know. She sat me down. She said, I just want to let you know, I'm here for Jesus and Jesus only, and I have no interest in dating you. And of course, you're going to have those conversations. And within a few short months of us interning together, starting youth ministry, worship ministry, this girl, her name's Amanda, we started dating. And so we're interning, we were dating. We started youth ministry in DeMont at that church under the church's leadership and growing in Bible college. And at that time, they didn't have a youth ministry, but we started a youth program that started reaching about 100 kids a week. And at that time, I'm 18, 19 years old, reaching teenagers that are basically my peers.
Yeah, a child among children, really. I mean, you know, it's just how it goes.
That's exactly what it was. Call it wild, call it naive. But one thing that I've always been passionate about is loving Jesus and wanting other people to experience that relationship with him as
for
well.
Sure.
And so my wife and I did interning for a couple years at that church. We worked towards our education. After those couple of years, I asked Amanda to marry me. We got married. And then next thing you know, out of those relationships we were building outside of our ministry, because we were trying to learn, not just grow educationally, but grow in ministry and network. We end up meeting a pastoral staff from Georgia. And so after 2 weeks of Amanda and I being married, I moved Amanda 850 miles away from her family and everybody knew. Which, there you go. That's some free marriage advice.
I was going to say, you're gonna write a book on that one, because I don't know.
If you want to know if you make it, go ahead and do that.
Go ahead and do that.
But again, this church was looking for a worship pastor. They're looking for a youth pastor. And the place we went to in Georgia, believe it or not, it was still in that rural vein. And we went down there, started loving kids and loving people, building relationships. And again, with God's blessing, his favor, and the team that we built, we started another successful youth ministry that was running about 100 kids a week. And and so after all this, we're seeing God's favor, we're seeing God's blessing, we're learning ins and outs of ministry along the way. Because in both situations, really, we learned how to do ministry with little to nothing to get started.
Yeah, for sure.
And kind of a tragic event brought us back to Indiana after a year of being down south. We found out Amanda's stepdad had passed away tragically. And so we decided to move back to Indiana to try to help her family. And in the process of that, you still have this call on your life, right? I still hey, God, you've called us to ministry. I don't know what it's going to look like, but let's move home. And within about 4 months of us being home, my pastor, Dr. Phil Willingham, called us from Heartland and said, hey, Pastor James, I've got a crazy idea. I feel a nudge from the Holy Spirit. I'm wanting to plant a campus in North Judson, Indiana, from Heartland. Now, I was familiar with North Judson because it's only about 15 minutes from where I grew up. It's a town of about 1,800 people. It's a historically impoverished community. This community is in one of Indiana's poorest counties in the whole state. And so Pastor says, listen, I want to talk. So I went and met with Pastor Phil. And he says, listen, started explaining his heart, his vision, what the Holy Spirit was depositing on him. And he said, Pastor James, I just want to let you know, I really don't have the money to start this campus. and the only way I can pay you is if you'll be a janitor for me at the Valpo campus.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And you can work on this in the afternoons and evenings, kind of take your time and start building relationships with people. And we'll just see how it goes.
Wow. What an offer, really. I mean, you know, what an offer.
Yeah.
Benefits,
yeah.
Endless, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You've got, you know, experience with a mop and a broom. And I'm telling you, it changed your life. So we started this campus. That's how it started. I started coming here in the afternoons and evenings and building relationships with people, building relationships with local businesses. We started Heartland Christian Center North Judson in the back of an American Legion, which for
love
those
that.
Who know about American Legions, you can probably sense in your mind what it smelled like, felt like, and the whole nine yards.
And they're all the same, weirdly enough. Like they all have, you go to any, I mean, you described an American Legion in Indiana, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've been to that same one in Montana. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right. That's right. So that's how this ministry started. We started with one person. On Sunday afternoons, we'd set up equipment, bring a Sunday morning service from Valparaiso, and our first attendee was a guy from the bar, just happened to stumble into church service that afternoon. And
nice.
But now here we are. We're 10 years into this thing. We've moved four times, bought four different locations here in North Judson, renovated them, fixed them up, made them nice. And now here, we actually own the largest downtown location that you can own in North Judson for our church. And historically, for the last 10 years, our church has been the fastest growing church in our community. And I think there's a lot of factors that attribute to that. But that's kind of where I am and where nice. I come from ministry.
Nice. Well, that's exciting to hear. And I just love capturing these stories because, like, this is the stuff our faith is built on. You know, one person stumbling into a church service on a Sunday, 10 years later, God's at work. And it's just so powerful. Thank you for sharing. I do want to dive into different parts of your story. Obviously, not a lot of, I mean, some do. I don't want to discount this large demographic, but not everybody starts out your journey to becoming a lead pastor of a successful campus and a plant in a rural community as a probably low-paid janitor. And so what were the lessons that you feel like God impressed on you in that season that built your foundation for the next 10 years of ministry?
Absolutely. You know, you become very humble when you have to push around a broom and operate a mop. And I've learned some lessons in that season of my life that serving God, regardless of what it may look like to you, if your heart's for ministry, your calling's for ministry, and the opportunity that God gives you isn't quite like what you expected, sometimes you have to have the faith and courage to walk through the door and do what's required of you in that season. And, you know, in that season of being a janitor, I learned how to be faithful in serving. You know, that's what my lead pastor needed of me at that time. Hey, this is the opportunity that can get you to where you want to go. So I learned how to be faithful in serving. And I think that's kind of been a fundamental thing for my last 10 years. Because I'm going to tell you, you know, starting a campus is difficult, especially from brand new. And, you know, you have to learn how to be faithful when you have one person, 10 people, 50 people sitting in the seats, and learn how to be faithful and steward the opportunity versus discrediting what God's given you. So that was one of the lessons I learned. Another lesson I'd say would be appreciating your team. You know, when you start out as a janitor, you appreciate from the lowest position you could think of your church all the way to the highest position. And it gives you a new appreciation to understand that without them, you can't do what you're wanting to do. And I also think it helps you to establish credit with them and establish a relationship that may be a little deeper than what you would if you don't have those kind of experiences. And then also, I think another lesson is how to put in the work. I love a quote I heard, and I'm not sure who it came from, but it said, if you're willing to do what other people aren't willing to do, you will get to experience what other people don't get to experience.
Oh, I love that.
And so, you know, from being a janitor, it taught me how to put in the work outside of church because I wasn't doing ministry during church hours. I was cleaning the building, but I was willing to put in the work in the afternoons and the evenings. And even today is one thing I'm proud of our staff is we know how to grind and we know how to put in the work to make it happen. So.
Yeah, no, those are all really great and insightful things. I'm challenged even just hearing that. I'm just like, man, I want to reassess and reevaluate and make sure my heart is still kind of on that train of serving. I love that. So let's talk about kind of the importance of having vision for the community, right?
Yeah.
And when you and I talked about this over the phone, you mentioned that you had this kind of power of the question, what if, as it relates to vision and ministry, as it relates to you know, what you can do, what you dream about. And so unpack that what if question for us and why it's so important for pastors to ask that question.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think sometimes that becomes a challenge in rural ministry, anytime you establish yourself or you're getting familiar with the culture, a lot of times you're going to hear statements about, well, we can't do this because our city is too small, or we can't do this because it's always been this way, or we don't have the resources, or we don't have the people. And sometimes, whether we want it to or not, I mean, these are the people we're reaching and bringing into our churches, right? And so when you're bringing these people into our churches and you're trying to build a church, the first thing hurdle you're going to have to kind of jump over is expressing this vision and sharing your vision in such a way where they don't get encapsulated by the idea of, oh, we'll never be able to do that, or our church can never get to this level, or we'll never be able to reach our community like that for Jesus. And so we've always been real intentional on asking the what if questions. It's assessing the needs of, we came and assessed the needs of North Judson, asked what if we stepped into this situation and provided an answer to this need that not only met the need, but also empowered people to overcome and not find themselves in that need again. Sure. Historically, we've been involved with food pantries. We've been involved. One of the first things we did when we came to North Judson was work our ministry networks. We got a hold of Rural Compassion and got 800 brand new pairs of shoes to distribute to the school system. You know, and for some of these kids, they've never had a brand new pair of shoes. So yeah, you're already establishing by asking this what if question, what if we got new shoes for the entire school population and kids had a brand new pair of shoes? We've done book bag drives. What if we got 200 book bags and we provided 200 students with brand new things that they've never had versus the hand-me-down book bag? And you begin to formulate your ministry based upon what if we did this, what if we stepped into this, what if God is as big as he says he is and can do what he says he can do, and we go for it and see what God happens. I think a lot of people are inspired by vision, and I think a lot of people are intimidated by vision. So you got to have the right people in the room to inspire, that has influence over other groups of people that can then get on your team and push your vision forward, not just for your church. Because if you just have a vision for your church, it's going to stay inside the four walls. But newsflash, sure, ministry, a lot of times people don't just show up to come to the four walls. But if you get out to your community and you go to them, chances are you can get them to come to you. So that what if is always, you know, and part of it too is not what if we duplicate something that somebody else is doing.
Sure.
You know, I've never been one for trying to copy a ministry per se that another church is doing in our community. I'd rather get behind them and help them best that I can, and then look for the gaps. Like, where are the gaps? And then what if we step into those?
Man, that's awesome. I love that question. I'm probably going to steal it and ask a bunch of leaders that question of, are you inspired by vision or intimidated by it? Because that response sets the tone for where we go and how we get to see God, you know, how we get to partner with God. So that's hugely encouraging.
Yeah.
Well, let's just dive into, you mentioned that this context has been kind of a high poverty context. And so over the phone again, we talked kind of about how to have a generosity mindset. But we also talked some of the practical ramifications, like what does it look like if you are a church in an impoverished context? Like, how have you found practically, you know, does that affect your church? Does it affect giving? Does it affect how you give or what needs you try and meet? But let's talk about that. How do we minister effectively, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're in an impoverished community, there are challenges that come along with that. Obvious, the big one is financially, you know, because you're looking at, how are we going to support this church in this area?
For sure.
Another one is the mindset that comes along with poverty. That poverty mindset of sometimes it's good enough, or what can I get out of people? And a lot of times people that get into poverty, they don't mean to develop these mindsets, but sometimes it's kind of how they've been conditioned, right?
Right.
It's, hey, what can I get out of the system? What can I get out of this organization to help me survive? It's a survival mentality.
Right, right. Yeah, you can't really fault somebody for just trying to get by. You know what I'm saying?
You can't. You can't. So when you come into your community, and especially if you're in an impoverished area, one of the things that we've always tried to be intentional about is, how do we elevate the culture and not match the culture? How do we elevate and take people's experience to a new level for them to see, hey, I can have something different in my community. I can have a different experience. We did it practically by every place that we've ever been. We've always tried to make the property look better than what it started. Now, that may sound simple and silly, but when you go to an impoverished place and you begin to improve your surroundings, culturally, you're beginning to change people's mindset to say, change can happen, change will happen, and the church is going to lead the charge about bringing the change if that's what it takes. And so when we begin to, you know, have people start attending our church, we've always tried to be real intentional about how do we meet people where they're at, but also how do we empower these people to get out of their present circumstance? Mm. You know, because Christ comes not to just bring life transformation spiritually, but, you know, the principles that the word gives us allows us to grab a hold of principles that can change, you know, our lives currently right now. on an outward perspective, not just an inward perspective. And so when you begin to look at, okay, are people impoverished because they don't know how to handle finances? Okay, sure. How do we bring a Dave Ramsey financial peace course financial peace course to do something? Are they impoverished because they just don't have the right mentality behind their life and thinking that their life means something and that God created them with purpose? Okay, then we're going to be intentional with our message to let them know, hey, God created you with a plan and purpose, and don't allow your circumstances to hold you back from where God is wanting to take you. So you got to be intentional with your message. Be intentional with empowering people. Some people are impoverished by choice. Some people are impoverished just because they don't have the resource or nobody showed them how to get out of it. And so if your church can be the place where you're bringing life change to families about breaking this poverty mentality, I'm telling you, you create a bridge to your community that obviously at some point or another, your community is going to begin to shift from this impoverished place into, hey, let's think about thriving. Let's think about growing. Let's think about what our community can be.
No, that's awesome. I mentioned this in the introduction, but it is near and dear to my heart. The idea that we're not just ministering in a place, but we're actively making that place better. We're helping people's lives find hope. I mean, there's just a lot of the gospel can show up in just a wonderful set of conversations around it, you know, and it's super exciting. Yeah. But so you've been involved personally and as a church in what we would call community development, right? And I was even surprised because, you know, everybody kind of finds a way to get involved in their small town. Some people are co-vocational, some people volunteer in different organizations. But you mentioned even like things like the Chamber of Commerce or trying to go and help economic development or develop properties and these different things. So walk us through some of those examples of how you personally, how the church has been involved in community development.
Sure.
And then also, and this will be the second question, but how does community development help pastors do the main thing, right? Because obviously we never want community development by itself to be the only thing we offer, right? Like we are still preachers of the gospel. We are bringers of hope. We are hoping that, you know, the message changes their life. But I believe, and I know you believe, that community development can be such a powerful tool. So walk us through some examples and then how it kind of opens the door for the gospel.
Absolutely. For the last several years, I'm actually a town council member here in the town of North Judson. So I serve on the local government body. And so almost as long as our church has been here, I've been serving in local government. Now, I'm going to tell you, Joe, I didn't ask for that. Okay.
Nobody ever does. That's the problem.
I didn't ask for that opportunity.
Like nobody ever does.
Yeah. I was actually, I was interviewing for a school board position that was town appointed. And I met the present town council members at the time. And instead of the school board position, they approached me for a seat that was becoming vacant and asked if I would take the seat on the town council versus the school board. And so, you know, when I started looking at these things, I really felt like God challenged me because I basically told the Lord, hey, if you really want me to do that, you're basically going to have to put me there. And when they showed up to my office and said, we, if you want the seat, it's yours type deal.
Oh, wow.
I said, okay, I can't get around that. So,
so
I've been involved in, and again, just to paint the landscape of North Judson, when I first came into our city, you look around, you see destitution everywhere, right? The downtown's buildings are looking a wreck. You drive around the city, people's homes are not nice. They're not cleaned up. They're not picked up. The water towers in our community are rusted. You know, we've been to communities where you can just tell that you get the sense that it's dying, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, when you're talking about being involved in your community, you're looking for avenues that, again, I got involved in some of the first things that we started talking about as a team. And I brought the perspective, again, of that what if principle that we talked about earlier. I brought that perspective of church into the perspective of the town council to begin to challenge people's mindsets to say, what if we begin to pursue this? What if we begin to pursue infrastructure? What if we begin to pursue places and places for families and parents and kids to be able to enjoy themselves in our community? And again, 10 years ago, people were leaving North Judson. Today, people are trying to, we have a housing shortage. You can't buy a house in North Judson. and where our water towers are redone. I've spearheaded a project of doing a splash pad in the community.
Gotta love it.
Right now we're in a multi-million dollar park renovation. We're annexing property to build brand new homes in North Judson. People's property values have come up. The downtown is coming to life. We've attracted new businesses into town. I know some pastors listening to this are like, yeah, but what does that have to do with the gospel? Mm. What does what you're doing in North Judson being involved? And that's just one aspect. Again, when you're building relationships, I think it's great for pastors to have relationships with their local government, with the Chamber of Commerce, with local business people. Because I'm going to tell you, in some of my youth ministry experience and kids ministry experiences, the ones that stepped up to the plate to help fund some of this has been local businesses and local people who say, hey, we believe in what you're doing, Pastor James, and we see it. And so you're building this network of people. And as you do this, there's a few things that come along with it that's going to help you. One, you increase your influence as a leader, as a pastor, and as a church. You become known as the ones that's believing for and having a hand on bringing life to your community again, right? Which in turn, it's going to increase your impact. Because the more people that, again, this goes back to having that vision, not just for your church, but for your community. Right. When people begin to see and believe and see something dying come back to life, it really speaks metaphorically to the fact of what Christ can do in our lives, that he takes something dead and brings it back to life. And out of these, you know, this increase of influence and impact, it engages people's interest into your ministry. Today in my church, I've got local government officials that come to my church. I've got local businessmen and women that come to my church. I've got people that I've invested over the years, over these last 8 years being involved on the council members. They come to my church because they hear, see, and saw the vision and saw things start to come to life. And it piqued their interest. Why are you the way that you are? Why do you believe that this can happen? And out of that, it created this interest in our ministry to now, you know, in a town of 1,800, our church runs 200 people on a given weekend.
Which is just awesome. I love it.
Which is incredible. And I don't say that braggatorily, but
But it's cool to see what God has done, right?
Yeah. And you know, it speaks to the fact that I believe if God can do that in North Judson, Indiana, and position me in a place to create that community influence, he can do it in every rural town community in America. If you have somebody that gets in there and believes it and says, okay, God, you're a big God. Whatever you want to do, I'm on the team and I want to be a part of it.
Man, I love that. I'll share some of my own story because I know you and I kind of agree on this point. But you mentioned too that each of the you know places that you own property where your church was, that property was dramatically improved. You know, I think even remind me, this downtown area, was this the one where you had like a junkyard next to it? Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So the current property we're in now was the original lumber yard for North Judson, and it is a gateway property. You have to go by my church to get into downtown North Judson. Mm-hmm. And so when we purchased this property several years ago, it was actually split into a couple parcels. We purchased a parcel that had the main building on it, which is about 13,000 square feet. We said, okay, let's do something with that. But the eyesore that came along with it was the other part of this property that was, in fact, basically a junkyard. Right. There's weeds growing up. There's piles of cars, heavy equipment. It's just junk. Yeah. And we had this, there was a front loader on the front side of this property that basically blocked a good view of people seeing from the highway our church. And I'm like, Lord Jesus, this building we bought's great. But God, you're going to have to give us the resources to buy the rest of this. We need this. And we need this to grow. We need this to expand. And so actually, it was just 2 years ago that everything came together. We met in negotiation with the property owner. We purchased that property. And within 3 months' time, we had brought in heavy equipment, dumpsters, everything you could do. And we totally cleaned this property up. It looks totally different now. It's clean. It's nice. We have a pavilion out there, a storage building now. And so when you pull in and come down towards North Judson now, I mean, our property looks really, really nice. And we had a lot of compliments from community members saying, thank you so much for cleaning this area up and making it something we can be proud of. And out of that, believe it or not, we've had people coming again, start coming to our church because they see it. man, Heartland has continued to grow. Something's happening at that church. They're always doing something. And I said, thank you, Lord. That's what we want to do.
Yeah. And I experienced the same thing in my small town. You know, we ran a youth center property that was an old 7-Eleven and had kind of abandoned gas tanks. And so there was this old, you know, everything just looked old and run down. And so we started knocking down dead trees. We put up a fence, we repainted the building. We redid the parking lot. Finally got rid of a lot of the signs of, you know, that. And then we took over a coffee shop and managed to start a fresh business with a fresh look right in the middle of COVID. And I had local business owners who later came to our Easter service. But they, you know, they were like, hey, thank you for just like caring about the town. And I think we underestimate so much that like even small things, you know, like some of the stuff you mentioned, like, yeah, maybe a pastor doesn't wake up tomorrow and say, hey, I have the connections or the access to bring in a splash pad or do a multi-million dollar park renovation, but you can clean up a property. You know what I'm saying? You can offer to paint something. You can offer to do something to beautify the community. And people notice, you know, and so, man, that's just so powerful. Let's dive into one last thing. Because I do want to, you know, I asked you, said, hey, what is kind of this, if I had missed anything, you know, I said, what's one thing you just want to tell people? And you talked about how in each phase of growth in your church, you place a ton of importance on ministry to the next generation. I remember even, you know, way back in your story, you said you were running kids ministry out of a parking lot, which I'm excited for you to share a little bit about that. What's, you know, I mean, we can all obviously say, yeah, sure, next gen ministry is important, but there's power in the words we put behind that. So walk us through that. Why does it matter so much to you? And especially share that parking lot story, because I love that part, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'd mentioned that when we first started, we started in the American Legion and, you know, the room that we were doing church in, it's right next to the bar. And so when we started, it was a springtime. So the weather was pretty conducive for us. It's pretty warm outside. So we started doing kids ministry in the parking lot because that's the only spot we had to do kids
ministry. In the bar parking lot.
Yeah. Yep, in the bar parking lot, we're doing kids church. And, you know, the importance of that was because we wanted families to know that we had something for their kids and we wanted to invest into their kids. And, you know, as our church grew, we've always looked at ways, how do we invest into kids? And when we moved from the American Legion to our downtown location, we started our youth program on Wednesday nights. And the reason I place such high emphasis on kids ministry and youth ministry is that if you're not reaching the next generation of kids in your town, that your church is on the timeline. If you look around in your congregation and you just have older adults, your church may have a 10-year, 20-year, 30-year timeline, and then it's done. Your influence is fading away. Your impact is fading away. So if there's anything that you could do, and truth be told, when we really made a big emphasis, and we dedicate a large part of our budget towards kids ministry and youth ministry for the fact that we want parents to know we have a place for their kids, we want to love on their kids, and we want kids to know that, hey, church is a great place to be. It doesn't have to be boring. It doesn't have to be anything that you think it might be. It's a place that you can experience the real love of Jesus Christ. He can transform your life. And even in the kids and youth ministry, kind of going back to the impoverished community, if you're investing in them at a young age and helping them and resourcing them and teaching them about Christ and teaching them about life and life principles, guess what? You can change generations of that family to come. You know, God can change them because you're resourcing them to help them see God has something greater for them than what their present circumstance allows.
Yeah, man. I really love, you know, we show priority by what we give time to when it's inconvenient and when we give money to when it's inconvenient. And when I hear your story, I can't help but be challenged as a pastor and to challenge our listeners to say, you know, when push comes to shove, bite of a parking lot or not having a building or whatever, it's like, are we prioritizing next gen ministry? Are we putting our budget towards it? Are we putting our time? Is that the place where we're getting creative investment to make sure it happens?
One thing just to tag on that real quick, Joe, is the fact that I also learned, this is fun, that sometimes parents will forgive your mistakes in your Sunday morning services if you got an awesome kids ministry. So you may drop the ball a little bit.
Yeah,
you may drop the ball a little bit on a Sunday morning, but you got a killer kids ministry. A lot of times you can get a lot of forgiveness.
Man, so. I love that. Yeah, if there was ever just a very practical help you out reason, like
That's it.
Well, Pastor James, thank you for being on the podcast. This has been just so fun, so insightful. I really enjoyed it. So thanks so much.
I've enjoyed it, Joe. Thank you for this opportunity, and I appreciate you allowing me this time to just share some of my story.
Absolutely. Well, hey, from all of us at Rural Advancement, once again, it is our delight, our pleasure to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by real people who get it. And we just hope that you've been challenged, encouraged, inspired. Of course, I could tell you to check out Spotify or Apple Podcast or our website, ruraladvancement.com. But we know rural, and we know that the best way for this podcast to spread is for one leader to talk to another and say, hey, here's some conversations you got to be a part of. So for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor James Young, and we will see you next week.